Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, to another episode of the Pull Up Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Noble, and alongside of me today is Cleveland Cavs writer for Fear the Soil, Raptors for Hoops Habit, Hoops Lounge, everywhere and everywhere on the internet is this man, Justin Rowan. You can follow him at Cavs Canada. I assume that's a play on Cleveland and Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. As a Canadian Cavs fan, I actually put it out to Twitter and someone suggested it and I liked it. So it's kind of stuck.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I don't have to spell it, put it that way. You know, sometimes you get some guests on here with crazy Twitter handles and it's not really the best radio promotion for Twitter handlers. But let's talk about the game that happened last night. Everyone's talking about it. It basically turned into a football brawl. We had the Golden State Warriors losing for the first time at home to the Boston Celtics, who played them very tough the first time they played. They went to double overtime. The Celtics just kind of match up very well against the Golden State Warriors. Do you agree or disagree, and why do you think that's the case?
I think they do match up really well. This game was obviously a little different as there was no Andre Iguodala or Jay Crowder for Boston, so it's not the ideal matchup between these teams. But I think what we've seen with teams that can make Golden State work, they typically have a shooting guard or a longer combo guard that they put on Curry defensively. Detroit did that with Stanley Johnson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Boston's able to do that with Avery Bradley, really make him work. There's no way that you can ever stop Steph Curry. Really, you can't stop the league's best point guards, but they have guys, they make them fight through screens. Defensively, they try to make him work on that end of the court with Isaiah Thomas. And then on defense, they have those longer guards that get up into him, try to take away his airspace. And I think that's a big key for matching up against the Warriors.
Yeah, you know, I just view it as teams who can guard both opponents' guards, because we know the two-headed monster that is Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. And having one defender, all you're doing is taking one of those two out of the situation, where the Celtics here actually have three, four good defenders at a time that really guard the perimeter very well. As you pointed out, Avery Bradley can pressure the guards. Marcus Smart does a hell of a job as, you know, guarding guards as anybody. Evan Turner, who doesn't get the credit he deserves, just because, you know, he has some head-scratching moves and plays at times, and he's kind of an enigma of the NBA. Like, no one really knows what to make of him, but he's been playing very well with the Celtics and then on the Brad Stevens, especially defensively this year. Now, I think the big topic of discussion from the game was, first, I love fans. Fans always complain to the refs when the team loses. Listen, the Warriors are going to have to lose it sometime. You know, they're still probably going to break the 72-10 record. They're on pace to at least do it. You lose a game. It happens. You don't blame, you know, don't blame this, don't blame that, don't blame everybody in between. So the big thing that happened was the Draymond Green play at the end of the game. Get Steph Curry wide open. First, I don't know what was going on with Evan Turner. He just slipped and fell and, like, tried sliding under Draymond. Draymond ends up falling over him, gets up, and basically power drives Marcus Smart into the ground, or, you know, moving screens, shoulder into Marcus Smart's chest, lifted him off the ground, whatever you want to call it. Let me ask you, Justin, do you think that was dirty or just tough play that should – I mean, I think no one disagrees it should have been a foul, but, you know, do you find this to be dirty? Think it's a flagrant? How would you have officiated that play?
I don't think it was any malicious play on Green's part. I think he climbed up over Turner. He got up. He saw that Marcus Smart was coming and decided to kind of go down. He kind of sheltered himself. At the very least, I guess you could call a moving screen with that play. I think it would depend on what player committed that play. I think if it was someone that had a reputation for dirty plays, they would likely be ejected from the game in that situation. I don't necessarily think it was. And I think given how physical they were letting that game become at the end of it, I think it was the right move to not call a flagrant, but there certainly should have been a foul call there. And inconsistency with moving screens has been a topic surrounding the Warriors a lot this season. But to be fair to them, it's something that isn't called properly across the league. Just with the amount of screens that the Warriors really run, and the fact that they do have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, that if you do get away with that moving screen, you're letting historically great shooters hit wide open shots. I think that magnifies the situation, but it's something that I don't believe is called well across the NBA.
No, I don't think it has been for a long time. You know, Kevin Garnett was famous for that. It was only late in his career, post-championship with the Celtics, that he really was getting dinged on that quite frequently in games, and it had to change his approach almost. But, you know, at his stage of his career, I'm sure he didn't really care too much. But I agree with you. I don't think there was any malicious intent there. My whole theory and stuff like that is, you know, if you're really trying to hurt somebody, you'd hurt them. You know, I think, you know, it's just tough play, end of the game, emotions are high. Draymond's a very physical player anyways. Some say he's dirty. I can see dirty plays here or there, but he plays hard. And I know people who aren't Draymond Green fans hate that I'm going to say this, like, you know, that he plays hard, he plays tough. Sometimes he goes overboard with it, and especially in that situation, down three, last possession, you know, he's not going to hold up at any moment there. So, but it was a good game. I think the world would be happy. It's not going to happen, but to have a Celtics Warriors in a 7-game series, you know, both games have been thrillers. Both games are exciting. The Celtics never give up. You know, it doesn't matter how many they'll be down by the cap to the Warriors. They'll stay in there and give them a fight. Unfortunately, I don't see the Celtics getting out of the Eastern Conference, but let's jump into the Western Conference playoff there, because we have a battle at the bottom here. You have Memphis, who, you know, 6 games left, and they're trying not to make the playoffs. In my opinion, lost 5 in a row, 2 of 8 the last 10. They're only 1 game above Portland for the 5th seed. The Houston Rockets are 4 games out, so if Memphis just goes 0-6 and, you know, Houston, Utah, and Dallas, all those guys go 6 or, you know, 4-2 or 6-0 range, they all could be in the playoffs and Memphis could be out, but I doubt it's going to happen. Justin, as it stands now, go ahead. Do you think it's going to happen?
I don't think Memphis is going to miss playoffs. I think 500 gets you in the West. They're already at 41 wins, so even if they lose out, I think that they're going to make it in. But, yeah, they're going to get absolutely creamed in the playoffs first round.
Right. And you know the Clippers are praying that they stay in that 5 seed because they don't want to see Portland bump up there and give them a run for their money. Now, out of these teams, I think we both agree Memphis is in. So you got Portland, Dallas, Utah, and Houston all fighting for the last spot. Portland sits atop of those teams by 2 and 3 games. Who do you think is going to be sitting at home at base of those 4 teams?
Oh, that's so tough because logic would tell me the Mavericks. They're banged up, but with Rick Carlisle, anything seems possible. They seem to get wins when they need them. They do have a bit of a tougher schedule to close out the season, which is something to keep an eye on. But I believe they play the Timberwolves next, and if they can take care of business against kind of those lower teams, I see them getting in. Houston, you just figure that they would find some way to get in. I'm gonna go out on a limb and I say whoever loses the April 6th game between Houston and Dallas stays home.
Well, I'm with you there. I think we both agree Portland's not gonna miss it, although they have a pretty tough schedule. You know, they play Miami tonight. They go to Golden State the next night. They play, you know, Oklahoma City comes to town in April 6th. Then it's Minnesota, Denver. Utah, I think, is going to make it in. And the reason I say that is because they probably have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. They play in Phoenix next. They get the Spurs. You know, they'll take the L on that. Then they get the Clippers. That's a tough game. They might take the loss on that. And then they close out with Denver, Dallas, Lakers. So they're also winning the last game of the season. So it comes down to that. They got that. Dallas is the iffy one. Maybe Dallas is out of reach at that point, which I'm going to get to now. You're absolutely right here, Justin. The Dallas Mavericks have the hardest schedule. So they play Minnesota tomorrow. And then after that, it's Houston, Memphis, Clippers, Utah, and Spurs. That's 5 playoff teams in a row. The other 3 teams fighting for these playoff spots, they each get, you know, a Laker appearance, a Phoenix Suns appearance, or in Houston's case, they get Phoenix, Lakers, and Minnesota, all 3. And then they close it out with Sacramento, who was just eliminated from the playoffs the other day. they have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. I think Dallas is going to miss it. I'm with you. It's that logic over Rick Carlisle. I mean, you can't quantify Rick Carlisle's coaching ability because he's absolutely unbelievable. You know, and they're so banged up. Like, everything's telling you Dallas is going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, the other thing they have going for them is the last game of the season against San Antonio. What are the odds that every single player on is sitting in a suit that night? So that might ease up their schedule a little bit. But like I said, I think whoever wins that Houston game between Dallas and Houston, I think they're going to make playoffs and the other team's going to be sitting on the outside looking in.
So it sounds like we're both in agreement that the Jazz are going to make the playoffs. First time under the Gordon Hayward era. Most likely going to be the 8-7 seed, going to play the Spurs or Warriors. If you are a Jazz fan, what are you looking forward to in their first playoff appearance with this core group and Quinn Snyder?
Honestly, I think they should just enjoy the experience. We were talking about two historically great teams in the Warriors and the Spurs. I actually think they match up better against the Warriors. They're going to lose in four or five games no matter who they play. But they've given them a lot of really close games. And I think just getting that playoff experience for Rudy Gobert, for Derek Favors, Gordon Hayward, it's going to pay dividends. But ultimately, the goal for this season was getting into the playoffs. If they achieve that without Dante Exum and really poor point guard play, survive a lot of injuries, I think that deserves a pat on the back for Houston and their organization. I think their fans should just kind of enjoy the experience. Don't live or die with those games. It's a tall task to ask them to actually upset one of those teams. But I think this season's been very impressive from Utah, and I think they should just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So let me ask you this, because our good friend Snotty Drippin, James, we debated this hard last year. As you know, he's a Celtics fan. I'm a Celtics fan as well. Grew up in the area. And we debated this last year where they made the playoffs. And you know, yeah, they got their butts kicked the first round. And his whole thing was, oh, you know, why don't you just go get a lottery pick or, you know, get the asset, get the 19-year-old kid, and what the hell was going to the playoffs going to do for you anyways? And I think that people miss this lesson when it comes to the NBA. It's really the only sport that you have to lose in the finals before you can win. You go around the table outside of Duncan, and I guess Curry, everyone's lost, you know, before they've won. You know, Kevin Durant, LeBron James both have, and obviously Durant has not won. And it's more so get the playoff experience. Like, we hear the conversation all the time that it's just – it's a different animal. It's a different game when it comes postseason. And you need to experience that before you know what you're getting into. And the only way to grow as a team is to get to that level and face defeat. And you understand, you know, how hard it took to get there. Now you got to understand how much more work goes into winning it. That's how I feel. So let me ask you, do you value, if you're a fringe franchise, like, does it benefit Utah to make this postseason, or, you know, is it beneficial for them to get back into the lottery and, you know, maybe get another prospect or something? Like, what do you value more in a franchise that's young and upcoming?
Well, let's be realistic. If they get the ninth seed, they probably pick, like, 14th, 13th, you're not getting a franchise player at that point. If it's two picks lower, like, you're basically buying a lottery pick anyways.
Right.
I think if you're just on the cusp of that and you are, well, I don't think they ever make a conscious decision to lose, but those games where you have to basically win out or win a lot of those games just to make playoffs, that's almost a playoff-like intensity in itself. That teaches you to really try to overcome adversity. Maybe if the game happens in January, if someone punches you in the mouth in that game, you just kind of take it over. You just kind of concede that game. You say, okay, we'll get the next game or whatever. But if someone makes a big run against you and you're fighting for your playoff lives, that desperation, learning to pull together and overcome adversity, maybe someone's having a bad game. I think that's really valuable for the development of young players. And even if you can't get, maybe you are a few pieces short, having the exposure of the playoffs, seeing young guys do well within the role. If you're a role player on the Sixers, nobody's going to care about you and you don't have trade value. But if you do it on the national stage in the playoffs, people can say, okay, I can see him fitting into a different system, and maybe you can trade him and other pieces to get that difference maker. So I think it does benefit the franchise when you're on kind of the fringe of making the playoffs and you're young. If you're old, blow it up. But if you're young and you're on the kind of on the outside just trying to get in, I think it's beneficial to really make that push to get that experience.
Yeah, I'm with you there, especially with a team like Utah, who I feel like they have their core. You know, you mentioned Dante Exum not being able to play towards ACL over the summer playing for Australia. It's one of those unfortunate situations because they've never really been able to get their core all together. I mean, this last stretch here, really, you had their two best players. You know, Gordon struggled early on in the season with his newfound muscles. Favors missed some time in between the season here. But now, down the stretch, you know, Rudy Gobert is playing lights out defense. Favors and Hayward are playing really well. The acquisition of Shelvin Mack has been, unbelievable. Probably the trade deadline, deal of the year that, really benefited the team here. But I'm with you. Get the experience if you're young in Utah. It's their core. They need a taste. So we'll see what they do. And I'm excited to see them, play. They're one of the few teams left still playing that, early 2000s San Antonio ball where they're just going to grind out every possession. They're just going to slow it down. They're going to play tough defense. I mean, that's just the way they go. They're not a flashy offensive team. Let's jump over to the Eastern Conference. That's our bread and butter. It's where we are. It's what we know. It's what we do. It's such a fun postseason in the Eastern Conference, and it's a shame that we're going to have one team, possibly even two teams, be 500 or winning records missing the postseason. Probably the first time in a really, really long time here, at least over a decade from, my recent memory. But we got a lot of teams jumping around, and what do you think is more important for these teams? The teams like Miami, Charlotte, Atlanta, Boston. I guess you could throw Detroit and Indiana there, but I feel like they're kind of going to bottom out the 7-8 and play Cleveland, Toronto. But those four teams, the Miami Heat, Charlotte Hornets, Atlanta Hawks, and Boston Celtics, are all juggling their position right now. Who wants to play who? I feel like, Miami is the most dangerous there, especially if Chris Bosh comes back. Charlotte's been playing excellent basketball. Atlanta's turned it on as of late. All these teams are, really playing. I mean, Boston Celtics won't give up any game ever. They play hard the whole whistle. They got young guys and keep rotating. So it's such a tough thing. Out of those matchups, give me the ideal matchup for each of those three teams or each of those four teams.
Honestly, I really love the way it's seeded right now. I think it'd be incredibly interesting to see first round, you got Cleveland, Indiana, LeBron James versus Paul George. I don't think there's any team that's going to necessarily upset Cleveland in the first round, but that's one where you can at least have those two marquee stars that are going to, they're going to go at each other. And I think that makes for good TV. You got Toronto, Detroit, two teams very close to each other, a potential rivalry in the future. I think it'd be great for those teams to develop some bad blood against one another. Then you got Miami, Boston, which, good Lord, one of those teams going out in the first round. It's a bit of a shame because both probably have a chance of making the Eastern Conference Finals. But, man, that would be a great matchup. Probably two of the best coaches in the Eastern Conference as well, in Stevens and Spoelstra. I just think that would be fascinating. And then Atlanta, Charlotte. Charlotte looking for, I believe, their first playoff win, like in a single game since relocating back to Charlotte or getting that expansion franchise back. And then Atlanta looking to show that they can do something in the playoffs after disappointing performances in the past. So I think those matchups would be fascinating. Chicago missing playoffs, Washington missing playoffs is something that I don't think a lot of people expected coming into the season, but the matchups that we currently have, I think would be fascinating.
Yeah, I would like to see that 4-5 just a little sexier for the fans. I don't feel like people appreciate the Hawks. They don't really like watching the Hawks play. Same thing with Charlotte. A lot of those middle-of-the-road players, Kemba's very exciting to watch, but outside of that, there aren't really many players that really excite the average fan to, make them tune into that. I think it was exciting. I think, honestly, a dogfight, and I'm just curious to see – because we've seen this in the past in sports and all across the landscape of sports, is coaches will try to determine who they want to play and kind of coach towards getting that seeding. Maybe going down to number two is, more beneficial for somebody, not in this situation, but each of those teams are going to look at each other and But at the same time, because it is the 3, 4, 5, and 6, two of those teams are fighting for home court advantage. And I think that at this stage between all these teams, because it's honestly a coin flip, any matchup that happens between those four teams, I feel like the most important thing would be home court advantage. And, I mean, they're all battling. There are half the game separating all four of those teams. Three of them are tied, just different winning percentages. And, you know, one team's played a couple more games. Having said that, out of that batch, or throw Detroit and Indiana into the mix, is anybody challenging a Cleveland Cavaliers and Toronto Raptors Eastern Conference championship?
I think Toronto might be in jeopardy. Damari Carroll, his return is kind of still up in the air. And the other concerning thing is Kyle Lowry. He's been battling through an elbow injury that's caused his shooting to really fall off a cliff. Since injuring his elbow against Orlando in January, he's played the most minutes per game out of anyone in the NBA. I think that's a situation that's been mismanaged. And just given, as you mentioned, how close all those teams are, there's a lot of good teams that could potentially be a team that would have home court any other regular season that could be playing Toronto first round. I think if Toronto's injured, they're trying to get over their playoff demons of the past, I think there's potential for an upset there. I see them getting out of the first round, but as if it breaks down the way it is now, with Miami or Boston being their second round team, I can see those teams potentially beating Toronto. As far as Cleveland, it depends what Cavs team shows up. They've had trouble with focus throughout the year. Their defense has been good overall, but it goes through lulls where the effort just isn't there. If Miami's fully healthy, you're talking about Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Joe Johnson, Chris Bosh, Hassan Whiteside, Luol Deng, great coaching. Cavs are probably at a coaching disadvantage there.
Did you forget Amari Stoudemire?
Oh, sorry. The highlight reel himself, Amari Stoudemire. Oh, and I forgot Gerald Green. So I think there's a potential for Cleveland to play below the level they're capable of. And Miami capitalizing on that. Obviously, they aren't the same names as they used to be in the past, but those are hungry veterans looking to get revenge against LeBron and well-coached.
Right. If I understand this, because I think this is what most people believe, and I tend to believe this, that Cleveland's probably their own worst enemy going into this postseason and into the postseason.
Absolutely.
I don't think anybody disputes they have the most talent out of any of these rosters, but it's a matter of do they play together or do they play against each other? And you know, with all the drama that always surrounds a LeBron James team, it really takes some thick-skinned players to be able to withstand 2.5 months of postseason basketball with all the hoopla that's going to come with LeBron. You know, if he makes an odd look at Kevin Love, there's going to be articles written that LeBron wants Kevin Love gone, and they're going to have to listen to all that crap for 2.5 months while they're trying to achieve their goal of bringing the title to Cleveland. Having said that, let's assume that they figure it out. They understand that they're their own worst enemy. They get through the Eastern Conference here. Do they have a chance against any of those three teams in the Western Conference who are most likely going to represent the conference out there? You know, I think it's only between the Warriors, Spurs, and Thunder that actually have a shot of representing the Western Conference. Does Cleveland have a shot against any of those three teams?
Well, I mean, if it's the Thunder, the Cavs probably are coming away with the title. I think that's the only series where they would be a definite favorite. They've just had the Thunder's number over the last couple of years. They blew them out both times this season. Or I guess the one game was closer, but that was without Kyrie. The Spurs would be an interesting matchup. I think that would go 7 games for sure. I'd consider the Cavs the underdog there, but they would have a chance. Warriors are the better team. Without a doubt, they'd be a heavy favorite in that series, but you can't ever count out LeBron, especially we don't know what level he can get himself to still in the playoffs. It was really unfortunate that they only played each other twice in January because the team was still trying to come together. Kyrie, it was his second game back on Christmas, and he was still on a minute restriction and far from himself in the second game. I think the Warriors definitely are the favorite there, but the Cavs are going to have a chance no matter what. But they're certainly going to be the underdog, which is funny to say about a LeBron James team.
It's such top-heavy out in the Western Conference that you almost want whoever represents the Western Conference, those two teams that are fighting for that honor, to just be the NBA Finals. I mean, I would love to see a Golden State Warriors and Spurs for a title, but unfortunately, I think he'll play one more series. I think that is probably the only way that Cleveland wins. If Cleveland does represent the East, and it's the Spurs and Warriors, and they go seven games, they go the distance. You know, we're talking, you know, historic-type postseason matchup like the 2010 Bulls and Celtics there when they went, you know, something like seven overtimes combined over the six-game series. Something that just drains both teams out, that by the time they get up for the finals, you know, they're just exhausted, you know, beyond exhausted, especially an older team like the San Antonio Spurs, and they're going to have to rely a little more on LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard, which they basically have, but, you know, those old legs might not be up for another long, grueling seven-game potential series. It's definitely going to be a fun postseason. I think this – people have been saying it. This is a historic season. You got the Golden State Warriors most likely going to break the record. You got the San Antonio Spurs right on their heels having a historic season, 38-0 at home. Might do a 41-0 at home to, you know, finish out the season. And then in the Eastern Conference, it's just going to be a dogfight from anywhere from three down. And, I wouldn't rule out if, you know, Detroit or Indiana ends up in the sixth seed that they could, you know, win a playoff series and move on to the next round. But let's close it out here. We got a couple more minutes left here. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls, a team that was winning 50 games a year all under Tom Thibodeau, tough team in the postseason, very strong defensive team. It has not worked out. Now, granted, injuries have happened. Ownership has been happening. Do you blow the Chicago Bulls team up, or do you think they can turn around and build around Rose and Jimmy Butler?
I don't know what the Bulls are doing. I mean, the rumors are that they're looking to move Jimmy Butler, and that's the decision they're favoring. And is that suggesting they want to build around Pau Gasol and the remains of Derrick Rose? I can't understand it. If I'm the Bulls, Jimmy Butler becomes the face of the franchise. I look to move Gasol and Rose. Oh, well, I guess Gasol's in the final year of his contract, so you let him walk. Rose, I don't know if he's even a tradable contract, but you can't build around him as a cornerstone, and you just go with the youth movement. Letting Joakim Noah walk is certainly going to signify the end of that era, but there's good young talent there. I really, really do like the pieces that they have. I just think they need to give those guys the opportunity and start going towards the youth movement. But moving Jimmy Butler would just be absolutely baffling move for such a good player, arguably the best shooting guard in the game, on a very, very reasonable contract.
Yeah, you know, as a Celtics fan, I've been secretly hoping that the Celtics were going to be able to pull off a Jimmy Butler heist. But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. We just got to accept that fate. And I agree with you. You got to build around Jimmy. Try to cut the roster the rest of the way. You're going to most likely be in the lottery, as we pointed out earlier, a little later in the lottery, but you got to get out there. You got to start scouting again and get a good draft pick. So, Justin, can't thank you enough. I hope to have you back on as the playoff games start rolling around and get some of that insight on the Toronto and Cleveland Cavaliers, since you're a Canadian Cavs fan.
Appreciate you having me on. Lots of fun.
Anytime. All right, take care, everybody.